All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. My name is Wes Waddell. The guy standing beside me here is Lynn Stringfellow. And just a little bit about us. I came to Christ going on 10 years now, 10 years ago or so, 9 years ago, when I went down to Tampa, Florida. Got tricked into going down there. That's a different story. But went down there and had a group of people that reached out to me and shared the gospel with me and led me to Jesus and then helped disciple me along. And Lynn was the campus minister down there. And so he's been my brother at arms for some time now. And this is actually our second time to teach here at Tulsa, so we're really glad to be back. And just so you know, this is going to be a pretty laid-back class. We're going to talk about some practical principles for disciple-making among 20-somethings. This is going to be beneficial for those of you who are interested in working with 20-somethings. It's going to be beneficial for you if you just want to make disciples. And it's not necessarily with this age group, because we're talking about principles here. But Lynn is going to provide the introduction for what we're going to get into today. And so I'm going to turn it over to you.
If you're coming here to hear real polished speakers that's got their spots all marked and know exactly when we've practiced what to make what moves, and you're going to be disappointed. We're just old country boys that have some experience in campus ministry and working with the 20-somethings, and we're going to share with you from an aspect of actually how they're being reached. You know, we keep hearing about how they can't be reached, and we want to tell you that's absolute nonsense. They can be reached. We are witnessing 20-somethings being reached in great numbers in our campus ministries. And that's what we're going to be talking about. It's not theory, it's how it's actually being done. You know, I've always been told in ministry that a minister really should have a hobby on the side, something that he's passionate about that can help him rest and recover. And one of the things I have always done, I used to be a fighter myself, so I now train professional fighters. And here in Tulsa, I'm currently working with the World Heavyweight Champion. And I tell you that to tell you that one of the things we do with even the current World Heavyweight Champion, when he comes into the gym, at least the first hour of everything we're doing with him and everybody else that's in that gym is fundamentals. We go over the same fundamentals no matter what level you are at, over and over and over and over. You're never going to reach a point in the fight gym where we are that you'll work on different fundamentals. There are no different fundamentals. Fundamentals are the same, and they stay the same throughout. Matter of fact, if you went to a different gym, and there's a number of gyms here in Tulsa, if you went to a different gym to see what their fundamentals were, you would come away going, well, they're the exact same. Because the fundamentals are the fundamentals no matter where, no matter what you work on.
Yeah, and I played baseball growing up. Like, I spent from about the age of 5 to when I was getting out of high school playing baseball. And I played on some really good teams, and I played on some really bad teams. And on the good teams, the thing we had in common is we constantly, just like Lynn was saying, we were constantly in practice going over fundamentals. And we had all these drills that we would spend hours and hours going over and going over and going over and developing muscle memory, and you throw a certain way and you hit a certain way, and you know, you keep your eyes in a certain place, and just all these different things. And it's funny because if you got like 6 or 8 really good baseball coaches together, and you put them all in a room together and, like, you know, maybe isolated them from one another and gave them a piece of paper and said, okay, baseball coaches, write down the fundamentals of baseball. You'd get the same fundamentals from each one of those coaches if they're any good, right? Same with the boxing coaches. Lynn has trained world champion fighters. You get a bunch of trainers at Lynn's level who can get together and just give a list of the fundamentals of boxing or kickboxing or whatever. They're going to give you a list of the same fundamentals, okay? Now, you take a group of church leaders and you put them in a room together and you sit them down and you say, okay, write down the fundamentals of ministry. Do you think you're going to get the same list from church leaders? I would say probably not. Okay? There's some guys who are going to tell you need to do this, this, and this. Others are going to tell you this, this, and this. It's because we have different goals a lot of the time. Okay? And just so you know where we're coming from, you know, every single Christian and every single church leader, you have different verses that you kind of lean into, that you see other verses of Scripture through. The verse we lean into and the passage we lean into is the Great Commission, okay?
You know, Wes, I was, not to interrupt you before we get on to the Great Commission, I was one time speaking, I think it was in Orlando, and I asked the audience the question, what is our purpose? As Christians, what is our purpose? And some of the feedback I got from the audience, I got things back like, well, our purpose as Christians is to love other people and serve them. Our purpose as Christians is to feed the homeless. Our purpose as Christians, and just got a whole list in liturgy of the different things of a purpose. It made me understand that everybody seems to think there's a different purpose for what we're supposed to be about. And a lot of the purposes that we would look at and they would call purposes actually are how we accomplish the purpose and not the actual purpose. That drives us into the Matthew.
Yeah, and I'll just read this. We're all familiar with this passage. I've got it hanging on my wall in my house. I see it every single day. But Matthew 28:18, then Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Okay, so this is a guy who's, Jesus is worthy of our worship. He's not just an ethics coach. He's worthy of our worship. He holds all the cards in his hand, okay? All authority in heaven and on earth has been given me. And he says, therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. Right? I love this verse. And very clearly, Jesus' command. There's only one imperative in this whole passage here, and it's the command to make disciples. It's a command to make students who are trying to become like their teacher. We make students of Jesus who, to the best of their ability, throughout their life, are going through this process of becoming more and more like their teacher, their master, their Lord, Jesus Christ. That's the goal we have. And so there are certain fundamentals that are correlated with having this as a goal. And see, the problem is, the reason you can take a bunch of church leaders and put them in a room and get a list of different fundamentals is because when you get down to brass tacks, we have different goals, okay? Now, let me illustrate this for you. Lynn is really good at being a target. He's a really good target. And oh my gosh, my target is not cooperating. Here it is. I drew that in my hotel room.
That's fabulous.
You can take me later.
You took some time with that, right?
Okay, so look, this is our, by the way, this is not the first time a gun has been at the Tulsa workshop. Back in the 70s, a biker showed up. I don't know who it was, but I heard the story. He came in. Nobody knew he was a speaker, but he was. He got up at the front, pulled out a gun, shot a like rubber block or something, and then preached the sermon on how Satan attacks us, you know, and what it looks like. And then people complained because he had long hair, right? Not because he
not about
shot
the gun.
A gun. And, yeah. So anyway, second time a gun has been at the Tulsa workshop. Okay, so here is my gun, and I'm going to shoot the bullseye, right? What's the problem? There's nothing coming out, right? It's not coming out. Okay, what about this? I'm going to shoot the target. What happened? What's the problem? Am I hitting the bullseye? Okay, let me try this again. Did it hit the bullseye?
No.
No, okay. All right, one more time. Did it hit the bullseye?
Yo.
Come on, give me a hand. Let's get excited about this. All right. Now look, simple illustration, okay? Some churches, they got nothing going on, right? You got nothing. You want to hit the bullseye, maybe you see the ball, you got nothing going on. Okay, I've been in part of that church. Anybody else been a part of that church?
Yeah.
Ain't nothing going on, right? All right. Then you got other churches, maybe they got a lot going on. What's the problem? It's going everywhere. Your energy is diffused. You're all over the place. You have all kinds of activities going on, but you know, you're not really aiming at the goal, right? Then you got other churches. They're really focused, right? That's the difference between diffusion and focus, right? You get the stream. Okay, they're focused on something, but it's something over here. Then you got those that are focused on hitting the bullseye, and they're hitting the bullseye, okay? I would like to suggest to you, this is our bullseye. When we want to talk about the goal that we should have as church leaders, our bullseye, the thing we need to focus on hitting, is not attendance, And honestly, the focus that, you know, is not hitting the target at all. A lot of mega churches are focused on getting people to show up to stuff, but they're not really focused on making disciples. Our focus can't be on attendance. Our focus can't be on, you know, there's a myriad of good things we can do. But if our focus is not on making disciples, we're focused on the wrong thing.
You know, one of the things I keep hearing over and over from the 20-something age bracket, and this is true with them, they are starving to have purpose. They want their life to be about something. The standard question you'll get from a lot of them is, everybody keeps asking me what I'm going to do with my life. I don't know. They're changing majors almost every semester because they don't know what they want to do. And they're struggling and they're looking for purpose in their life. What they want is a reason to be on this earth. They want to know why they were put here. This is it. This is a purpose. This is a reason. This is a purpose that's bigger than anything that we can dream up. It's bigger than anything else you can send kids to do. I don't care what it is. You can go drill wells in Africa. Those are great. Don't get me wrong. I'm not putting down drilling wells in Africa. But if it's not the purpose, it won't satisfy.
Yeah.
This is the purpose.
Yeah, and I don't want you to hear, what I don't want you to walk around, away from here saying is we need more baptisms. You know, making disciples, we need to focus on getting more baptisms. Because making disciples is not synonymous with simply baptizing someone. Right. And to explain, look at 1 Corinthians 15, verse 1 and 2. Paul says that in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 1, "Now, brothers and sisters, I want to remind you of the gospel I preached to you, which you received and on which you have taken your stand. By this gospel you are saved if you hold firmly to the word I preached to you, otherwise you have believed in vain." Philippians 2, verse 14, "Do everything without grumbling or arguing." It's Paul writing again. "So that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation, then you will shine among them like stars in the sky as you hold firmly to the word of life, and then I will be able to boast on the day of Christ that I did not run or labor in vain." There's that word "in vain" again. 1 Thessalonians 3, verse 4. "In fact, when we were with you, we kept telling you that we would be persecuted, and it turned out that way, as you well know. For this reason, when I could stand it no longer, I sent to find out about your faith. I was afraid that in some way the tempter had tempted you and that our labors might have been in vain." In other words, you guys may have gone back. You may have given in. You may have turned away from Christ. Paul repeats in these passages, don't miss this. He repeats over and over, if you guys do not hold firmly to the faith through to the end of your life, then my efforts with you have been in vain. Do you know what that means in contemporary language? It means a big, fat waste of time.
Right.
And so when we're talking about making our goal discipleship, to make disciples, we're not just talking about getting a bunch of baptisms. Because if we baptize people and they're faithful for a little while and then turn their back on the Lord and they're not faithful to the end, listen, our work with them has been in vain. At least that's what Paul said, right?
We have to teach them about transformation.
Yeah, it's a lifelong process. So look, the goal then, we need to structure everything we do when we're working with 20-somethings, not just getting them to show up to events, not just getting them to come to Bible studies, not just getting them to be baptized. We need to structure everything we do in working with 20-somethings around helping them commit to follow Jesus and then to follow through on that commitment for life. And that is a much, much different goal than a lot of ministries do. A lot of ministries structure around other things. And so the question then becomes, you know, we as ministry leaders and church leaders, what should 20-somethings see, hear, and experience within our ministries to ensure that our efforts in working with them are not in vain? And for the remainder of our lesson today and the lesson, the two on Saturday, basically what we're going to do is answer this question. And if we have some time at the end, we'll do some Q&A, like I said. But we've got three principles, just fundamentals, that we want to share with you today for the remainder of this class. And the first one is we need to teach our kids to love Jesus. We need to teach them to love Jesus. Now this sounds really simple. This is like a kid in Bible class, like, you know, what's the answer, teacher? Love Jesus, right? That sounds so simple. And it is. But let me clarify this for you a little bit. We need to love Jesus as he really is, not our cultural conception of Jesus. I really love what Paul says in Colossians 1. Colossians 1, verse 15, starting there. The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. Listen to this now. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. So Paul, you know, has the same theology on this as John did in the book of John. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. You know, and everything came through him. And notice what it says there at the end. All things have been created not only through him, but for him. Right? And so with your 20-somethings and with all of us in this room, we weren't just created, you know, to exist, to figure out what to do with our lives, and then to be comfortable the whole time. We were created for Jesus. Now you think about the implications for that. For Jesus. You weren't created for yourself. Yet our kids grow up hearing that that's how they should live, right? Verse 17, he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church, and he is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have supremacy. Not some things. You know, he's not your life coach. He's not your ethics teacher. He's not the nice guy who's the self-help guru that wrote a book and you put it on the shelf with all the rest of the stuff you got from Oprah. He's the head, right? He's God. He's over everything. This is the Jesus we follow. For God was pleased to have all of his fullness dwell in him, not some of it, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior, but now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight, without blemish and free from accusation. Then he goes back to this again. If you continue in your faith, established and firm, and do not move from the hope held out in the gospel. Let me tell you something. A lot of our kids understand they need to love Jesus, but they don't understand who Jesus is. Like, the fact that Jesus is God is news to them. And God has put us in their life so we can explain Jesus isn't just a self-help guru. He's God in flesh. And so when we tell them you need to love him, you know, the implication is you'd be radically committed to him as well. The natural outflow of that is this concept of dying to self. You want to talk about that?
Dying to self is something that, in our ministry in Tampa, where I was for 12 years, where we baptized a couple hundred kids, it was on the chalkboard at the very top. It was something that I wanted them to see constantly. Because to me, dying to self is the fundamental thing of Christianity. It is actually what is wrong with our societies. It is what's wrong with keeping our churches from going. It's what's wrong with us in the church. It's what's wrong with the church. If we have failed to emphasize and teach what dying to self actually means, that we are not supposed to live anymore. Paul said, I've been crucified with Christ. I no longer live, but Christ lives. We've lost that concept, and we haven't been teaching it. Matter of fact, we've been doing exactly the opposite of that. We've been trying to find out everything that they want and to try to satisfy them. If you get into a church situation where you're trying to decide, okay, what kind of music should we have? Should we learn these new songs that the kids are wanting to sing, or should we, you know, do this, should we do that? And you get sitting with some elders and they'll say, well, let's do some research. And who do they research? People in the church, the people that are already there. What do you want? Well, they're not supposed to want anything. They're supposed to be dead. So the answer should be, I don't know. We need to ask Christ what he wants. Because I don't live anymore. It's not about me. I really don't care what song you sing. Maybe we should research the world we're trying to reach and ask them. See, that's actually dying to self. That's the dying to self that says, it's not about me.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, when I first came down to Tampa to be with Lynn and them, I wasn't a Christian. And, you know, I didn't like church people, and I didn't want to be around, you know, him or any of the other kids. And, you know, I stayed, actually, I stayed in his house for a while I was there. And I remember one Sunday morning, I did not set my alarm on purpose because I did not want to get up and go to church. And Lynn just let me sleep. And he and Carol and Matt went to church at Bay Area that morning. And I woke up, and you know then I was like, oh, well, I guess I'll go show up for lunch because they were serving lunch up there and it was free. And I was kind of hungry. I was like, I'll just show up and tell him, you know, it's his fault that I slept in because he didn't wake me up. And I was in his house, so it's his fault. But I'll never forget, like, I walk up, and there's next to the food line is Lynn. And, you know, I walk in, and I'm like, oh, you know, hey, why didn't you wake me up? You know, like, it's your fault. And I'll never forget, he looked at me and he said, I'm not interested in working with people who are all about themselves. And I was like, did he just say that to me? Really? And it's funny because that thought, you know, it had already kind of been working on me because, as he mentioned, in the room, which I had to go to all the church functions while I was there, otherwise I couldn't stay with him and Gary. And so I had already been in the room where that phrase, die to self, was on the board in permanent marker. And I had been looking at that, like, through the week and just thinking about that. And it didn't hit me how self-centered I was until Lynn just called me out, like, to my face, right in front of me. And, you know, and since I became a Christian and I've worked with kids, that's not something that's limited to me. I mean, seriously, we're working with a generation of people that sit around and take pictures of themselves and post it on the internet for people to like. I mean, come on. It's just the way it is. Like, that's the way it is.
You know, it really wasn't hard to be that way with you. When he came into our ministry, his hair was scraggly. He smoked, so he stoned. He used languages that I didn't really appreciate, so it really wasn't hard to look at him and say something like that.
Yeah.
You know, some of the practical examples, I wanted to give a few more of those before we moved on. Some of the practical examples that I would teach our college kids, and actually it just came up through just a natural learning process, teaching our college kids how to actually die to self. Because it's one thing to put it on the board and to say it, kind of throw comments every now and then, and hopefully they stick and they get it, kind of like it had done with him. It's a whole other thing to say, well, let's just get real practical. Here's how you're actually going to die to self. When we would hold an event, and it didn't matter what it was, we could be going to the movies, we could be going bowling. I mean, it really didn't matter what it was, whatever it was we were doing, there was always that guy in the room that, I don't think I'm going to go. Why not? Well, I don't really like bowling. Really. It's, okay, here's the teaching session again. Get ready for it because I'm fixing to hit you real hard. I don't care if you like bowling. I didn't go around the room and say, hey, how many of y'all like bowling? Let's vote on it. Well, oh, there's 12 of you and there's 13. Okay, we win. We're going bowling. I really don't care if you like bowling. It's not about you. You're not supposed to be alive. It's not about what you want and you don't want. This is about the friends over here that these people have that like bowling, that are going to come and bowl with us, and that you get to meet. And you can't meet them if you're not there. The God of all the universe has worked in the background to get somebody there to meet you, and you're going to say, I don't like bowling. And that's the kind of lessons we taught over and over and over, and it just got to the point where eventually we had fewer and fewer of those kind of guys and girls saying that kind of thing because they got a little embarrassed when I'd call them out on it. And I would, and people would say, why, you're just mean. I said, yeah, but it was mean for a purpose. That purpose.
Yeah.
Well, the one that was up there.
Yeah, we've got to get over this fear of being, you know, perceived as impolite sometimes. Because honestly, God puts us in the lives of people so that we can speak truth to them, even when it's uncomfortable truth. And Lynn, speaking uncomfortable truth to me, like, really helped me do some introspection that I really needed at that moment in my life. And so that's, you know, if we teach our kids to love Jesus, they're going to want to die to themselves. And we don't need to be shy about reminding them of that. A second aspect of this is, you know, the way we present our gospel when we're talking about loving Jesus. The cool thing, if you will really commit radically to following Christ, it's not just about forgiveness. I think a lot of times we present the gospel just in terms of this is how to get your sins forgiven. But, you know, I work with the Crossings Church. I'm a member of the Crossings Church up in St. Louis. And one of the ways the things I really appreciate about our church is we don't just present the gospel in terms of you're going to move from like God's damned ledger to his saved ledger. We present the gospel in such a way where people understand that submitting to Jesus and through the gospel, you're going to actually become the person that God created you to be. And there's this person he created you to be, and there's these things he created you to do. And the way you're going to be able to fulfill your life's purpose and your life's mission is through submission to Jesus Christ. It's through loving Jesus, not just so you can be forgiven, but so you can become this person. And the cool thing about this generation, you know, I kind of knocked on them for being a little narcissistic earlier, but the really cool thing about this generation is they genuinely do want to change the world.
That's true.
Is anybody in here who works with 20-somethings? Raise your hand if you know a 20-something that wants to change the world, right? They want to change the world. And so if we can provide a vision to them, it ought to be fundamental for us to provide a vision to them. The way you're going to make an impact, the way you're going to change the world is by submitting to Jesus Christ and loving Jesus in your life. That's how you're going to fulfill these dreams that you have, right? And so dreaming ought to be fundamental.
He's talking about how they want to change the world, and they do. What we've experienced with 20-somethings is they're just like the rest of us as we were growing up. Everybody keeps saying they're so much different than we were. I grew up in the 60s. They're not any different. We were in the 60s. We were kind of nuts in the 60s. I don't know if any of y'all remember the 60s or not, but I do. I'm not so burnt out I don't remember it. We were pretty crazy in the 60s. They're the same way. They're no different. What they have, the same problem I had as a kid. They've got this giant hole that they want to fill. So they don't want to listen to their parents and fill the hole the way the parents said to fill it, so they go out searching for ways to fill it. Well, this particular generation, a lot of them are searching to fill it in really good ways. They're going out there and they're trying to fill it by service. They're going out and they're wanting to feed the hungry. They're going out and they're working for Habitat for Humanity. Or they're going out, they're doing all these things that are service-oriented, thinking that's going to fill the void. And don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with Habitat for Humanity or any of the service projects that would do. It's just that those things also are still not going to fill the void without the purpose attached to it. And that's what we're trying to give them, because doing all those things without the purpose, doing service projects without Jesus, what is the accomplishment? It makes me feel better. That's self-gratification, and that's just sick.
Well, and since you bring that up, like I'm involved with justice ministries. Like I grew up around urban ministries and working with the poor and stuff. And I think serving people is characteristic of any disciple of Jesus.
Absolutely.
I just don't think it's our mission.
It's how we accomplish the mission.
I honestly think the Great Commission is our mission. I think that's our purpose. I think anybody who's submitted to Jesus ought to be serving others, though. Characteristic is different from mission. Like, I just spoke at the National Urban Ministry Conference a couple of weeks ago and talked about this very thing. And I think it's very important that we keep our mission before us, and the Great Commission is that. But this third aspect of loving Jesus, you know, if we really love Jesus, not only are we going to do the other things we talked about, we're also going to push for maturity. Like, if we individually really love him, we don't want to just kind of exist in this, you know, funk our whole lives, this stagnant funk. We want to become more and more like him as we go through life. That's part of the becoming the person that you're created to be. And so in our ministries, fundamental, we shouldn't just value numerical growth. We need to push for maturity and help these guys mature. And we ought to value becoming, just as much as we value anything else. We got to be honest that that's pretty hard work, right?
Absolutely.
That's hard work, and that's a process. That doesn't happen overnight. But the second big thing here, you know, love Jesus. Okay, number one, love Jesus. Number two, love one another. Fundamental. Love one another. This means that you are radically committed to one another. John 13 says, a new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. And I just got to say, there's this false understanding in our country that, being a Christian means that you show up to church or you show up to events or you pray sometimes. But what Jesus says here is, being his disciple means that you are going to love one another. And in the one another, he's talking specifically about other disciples. In this passage, he's talking about Christians loving other Christians. And so what does that look like practically? Does it mean that we show up and say, hey, how you doing? I'm fine, you know, and have a cup of coffee together once a week before we sing some songs and listen to a sermon? Is that loving one another? Or is there more to it than that? What do you think, Lynn?
Well, when I was studying for this lesson, and I started looking at that verse, look back at the verse, John 13, 34 and 35. Let's look at just 34 for a second. A new commandment I give you, love one another. Was that a new commandment? Those of you that know the Bible know there wasn't anything new about that commandment, was it? What was new is what followed. He said, as I have loved you, so you should love one another. Right?
No.
Is that what yours says? No. That's not what mine says either. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. He's saying here that we must love one another. The God of all creation who came down and lived with us is saying, if you're going to be my disciples, and this is how we're going to be known as your disciples, you must, you don't get to choose, this isn't an option, you must love one another as I have loved you. The secret in this that I believe, that I saw, that just opened my eyes, that was just this thing, a light bulb that went off, that said, okay, how did he love me? If I've got to love you like he loved me, how did he love me? Well, he died for me, sacrificed for me, right? And he carried my sins to the cross, didn't he? That means I've got to sacrifice for him, and I've got to carry his sins.
Yeah, and I think part of carrying our sin, honestly, the hardest part in working with 20-somethings for most church leaders that I talk to, is that aspect of spurring one another on to holiness. You know, we've got all these one another passages in the New Testament, but the one we really struggle with in our polite Western culture in the United States is confronting people when they're screwing up. Because, you know, I know I struggle. I want to be liked personally. Like, I struggle with just sitting down and letting somebody have it when they need to hear something, because I want them to like me, and I don't like conflict. I don't like running full bore and starting a fight when I could completely avoid it. But sometimes, you know, I'm just a coward in that area. And this is something that I struggle with personally. You know, and when we're talking about working with young minds, that the decisions they're making in their 20s are going to affect who they are pretty much for the rest of their lives most of the time. You know, God has placed us there, and we may be the only ones who can really just sit down and say, what are you doing? I mean, look at what you're doing, and then look at what this says over here. And let's try to align the two, because something's not right here.
If I'm going to do what he said there, if I must do that, and I'm actually going to do that, I've got to be willing to be okay with him being upset with me when I call him out. Yeah. I've got to be okay with that, because I'm supposed to be sacrificing and dying for him and carrying his sins. If I'm not okay with that, I won't call him out on it. You know, instead, I'll set the alarm for him. I wasn't his dad. I wasn't going to set his alarm. They'd already tried that, and it didn't work.
And the third big thing, the third fundamental principle, is we have to love the lost. You know, again, if we want the people that we're reaching out to and discipling to not only be baptized, but hang in there for the rest of their lives, we need to teach them to love Jesus. We need to teach them to love one another. We need to teach them to love the lost, right?
You need to understand this. If you don't get anything else out about everything else that we're going to talk about, you need to get this point. This is key to reaching the 20-somethings. If you really want to know how to reach them, this is it. Out of everything else we're going to talk about, it all circles around this. If you can get the 20-somethings to have a purpose, a mission, a reason to exist, they will listen to you, because that's all they're searching for. This is so big with this generation is that there's no way I can overemphasize how big this is. If you give them a mission that's bigger than the world's got to offer, bigger than this everything they've got in their head that they've got to go do so that they'll leave this footprint, what bigger thing in the world is there in the world than to bring somebody with you for eternity?
Yeah.
There's nothing bigger than that.
And it's funny the way Jesus has set this up, like, you know, he wants us to go through life going toward him, and then he wants us to anchor other people onto ourselves as we move toward him, and then he wants them to do the same thing. It's like if we want our kids to become mature, one of the best ways we can do that is to teach them, you know, there's other people depending on you. Because that anybody who has love in their heart for other people, like, you know, I'm not in this by myself. You mean there's other people that are depending on me getting serious about my walk with Jesus, that they will? And when they start seeing, you know, like, I remember coming down to Tampa, the first guy that I baptized within a couple of weeks, because I, you know, I told the story in my dad session. You know, he had equipped me with this Bible study to use, and I was going down to apprentice with Lynn in Tampa. And I mean, the first Bible study or two that I went to, there was a guy there who was like, man, I really want to make some changes in my life. And I said, well, you know, I've got this Bible study. You know, I barely know it, but you want to go through it with me? And we went back and walked through this outline. And, you know, I told in the story, it's just, it was a terrible experience because I thought I was going to send the guy to hell, you know. But then at the end of the study, like, it actually worked because the power's in the message, not the messenger. And so this guy gave his life to Christ that night. And, you know, suddenly I saw, man, I can really make a difference in people's lives. And so I kind of caught a fire, and I started studying with people everywhere. But, you know, if you can get your kids to catch that fire, yep, it's going to wreck their lives in a good way. Because most of their lives need to be wrecked the way they're living it right now, right?
And that was after he, just clarification, that was after he'd been down there the first time. He came down twice.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He came down the first time.
Yeah, I had become a Christian by that time.
He came down the second time.
I was playing for the other James team.
Do you remember what happened to you? When we, because I think this was a moment that clicked something in your brain. We're baptizing a young lady, and we'd gone down there, and I forget who did the baptism.
Yeah, Amber. No, I remember. Okay, I got to tell the story.
Go ahead.
I had enlisted to join the Marine Corps, okay? I went to enlist, and I had high blood pressure. And so I went back home. I was living with my parents at the time, was not a Christian, did not like church people, and I told my dad I had high blood pressure when I was getting sworn in. They told me to go work out for another month and come back. My dad says, well, if you're going to run, why don't you do it in Florida? And I'm thinking, Arkansas, Florida, let's see here, you know, beaches or, you know, gravel roads, let's go to Florida. And so he's like, well, yeah, you remember the Lambricks, you know, the family down there? They said you can come stay with them, and so you just go down there for 3 weeks. I'll just send some money down for you. And I'm like, oh, well, okay. And so I go down to Florida, and I meet with Gary Lambert, who is the preaching minister at the Bay Area Church of Christ, and I'm going to stay with Gary. And Gary says, okay, Wes, you're welcome to stay in my house, but as long as you stay here under my roof, you're going to go to every single church function. And I'm like, oh, whatever, you know. And he's like, oh, and by the way, your dad sent some money down here for you, but you're going to have to earn it, so you're going to come to the church office with me every single day. And I'm like, oh, are you kidding me? You know, and so he takes me to the church office, and I'm hanging out, you know, in Lynn's office. And what they had done is they had bought a case of 100 Bibles and pasted evangelistic Bible studies in the front covers of these Bibles. And my job, quote unquote, was to go through and underline all of the verses that went with these evangelistic Bible studies in the, so it was all a setup. Like, I didn't know that going down. I was just told, hey, why don't you go run on the beach for a while? That's better than I, and so I go down there, and it was all this set up, and they had been praying for me, and they had expected me to come. And so they were on it. Like, they were like, we are going to get this guy in the name of the Lord. And so they really worked on me. And I remember one of those days whenever I was underlining in the Bible, I still didn't quite get it. But we'd had
many arguments and discussions.
I remember Lynn said, hey, come here, I want you to see something. And so I walked out in the auditorium at the church building, and they were baptizing a young lady. And Lynn went down there, and they had studied with this lady, and they baptized her, and they were done with the baptism and came back around. And Carol, Lynn's wife, was down front praying with her, and Lynn came up to me, and he got right up in my face, and he said, I know you like doing drugs, but the high that I'm feeling right now is better than any high you've ever had. Because that right there, you know, that young girl just baptized, that right there is what life is all about. And he walked off. And I was just like, this guy's crazy. But that stuck with me. And when I gave my own life to Christ, and I was able to turn around and study with somebody else, it changed everything, because I figured out I have something to give. And I don't care what your gifts are. I don't care where you fit on the spectrum in terms of how God has designed you to fit into the body. The Great Commission is for every single one of us. Yeah. And if we can help our kids understand that it's not for the guy up front, it's not just for the ministry leader, it's not just for the intern or the apprentice or whoever, it's for them too, that's going to change their lives. Because God has set it up, when we are making our own disciples and leading people to Christ, you know, we teach them, hey, you need to pray and read your Bible and be part of the body and all these things. Guess what? We're going to have an extra layer of accountability in doing. We're going to pray and read the Bible and be an active part of the body. God rigged it that way. Isn't that cool? And so if we'll just take advantage of the way God has already set it up to work, it's going to go okay. Right?
Yep. Let's talk about being dangerous for a minute.
I think we're out of time. Listen, I know some of you guys probably came here thinking we're going to get, you know, ideas for outreach events and stuff like that. We'll get into that stuff. Our thinking in putting this series together, though, is if you guys don't get the fundamentals, if you go home and just try to get, you know, like some events to put on or some different programs to try, if you don't get the fundamentals, it doesn't matter what kind of crowds you draw. All right? If we're not making disciples, what did Paul say? It's all in vain. And so the reason we share these fundamentals with you and start out this way, loving Jesus, being radically committed to Jesus, loving one another, being radically committed to one another, loving the lost, and being radically committed to reaching the lost. If you don't get those three things, it doesn't matter what the rest of the stuff you do in your ministry,
right?
Okay? So we're going to go ahead and wrap up for today. We'll be back Saturday, 2 sessions. Please come back. We're going to be walking through in those sessions the results of some national studies. We actually identified the 20-something ministries in the United States who are reaching the most number of people consistently over years. We're going to share with you the characteristics of those ministries in the next 2 sessions. So it's going to be good stuff, I promise.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to us. I'm humbled to have been here with you.
You are dismissed.